to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, real quick, Stocks and Jacks, I'm out. This is Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Frank Fahey. S&P futures down 275, slow morning. They were up last night a little bit, and they were down a little more, and now we're right here. Dow futures down 73, NASDAQ futures down 675. Well, up in our 31 cents, I believe we got Brent. Let me look for sure. I believe we have Brent. Yes, we do. We have Brent $70.68, so through 70 bucks. Arbob Gas, 198. I found a place yesterday, even though I did not get gas. I saw somebody at like 287, but I think that'd be a thing of the past this week. I think he'd be hard pressed next weekend to be under three. Just saying. Frank, how are you?
Excellent.
So we,
I paid 278 yesterday.
Where were you, in Indiana?
I bought it in Cook County at
really?
The, Sam's Club in Northlake.
Okay. Because I actually, surprisingly, the station's out on my usual spot and, tell us the name of the place. Bell Road, which is in the next county over, is usually cheaper, but they were $2.99 actually driving back through the suburbs. I saw it like $2.83 or someplace, somewhere on Speedway and 95th Street. It's quite a bit cheaper. It was $2.87, but whatever. I did not feel the need yesterday with my 42-gallon tank, so I let it go a week, so I'll probably pay $3.10 next week type of thing. But we've got a problem with Libya fighting again, huh? They were supposedly having this big, come to Jesus meeting where they're all going to be okay. Now all of a sudden they're fighting again. And the, interesting country, I was looking at the map yesterday, they really don't have any of the oil fields, the rebels, and, most of the population's in Tripoli, but, still, they control what, half the country at least, Frank? I mean, they got a chunk of it. Who knows how
that's going. Definitely do.
Who knows how, half of the place is sand, so, if you're not along either along the coast or you're in the oil places. It's kind of an odd geography, but, imagine that. So anywho, what do you make of all this? Are we, going to earnings season? Some people think it'll be the crummy season. Other people think that the, market doesn't care whether it's crummy or not, so. I'm not so sure that that's...
I think the market doesn't care. I mean, we've had 7 trading days in a row where the market's gone up. And at the end of last week, we had our president saying that he thought the Fed should start cutting interest rates, and he would appoint people that thought the same way as he does, as governors. So what's going on? You tell me. You're Mr. Fed guy.
Well, I will say this, that it's... It is not surprising. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's a dead read. I'm sure the man has asked people around him what could possibly bleep you up for your second term. And he would say, well, George Bush thought it was the Fed. Bush won, and Nixon didn't like Schultz. And there are all kinds of people who didn't like the Fed people being independent. And I'm sure Trump, thinking that everybody works for him, basically says, over my dead body, is that going to be a problem? These guys are going to throw us into a recession before the thing, and I'm going to control the place. I don't think there's... I mean, anybody who doesn't think, listening to the guy, that isn't the mentality, I don't know what you're listening to. Right?
Well, right. And I seem to remember that when Larry Kudlow, who is carrying the water on this, was appointed, there seemed to be a consensus among many of our friends that Larry was a good guy. He was a positive move.
Larry,
have we seen that positive move?
Larry is one of the... I don't want to say anything bad about somebody individually, but I sat there and listened to the guy back in the day. I've been around a long time, so have you, Frank. The Bush economy, greatest story never told, the Goldilocks economy, and 2 weeks later, we damn near fell apart. The man who's supposed to be the master economist had no idea this was going on in the... with every connection on Earth... had no idea this was going on in the subprime and and all the other stuff going on in the what do you call mortgage loan stuff. And you know, how do you be that blind when that's essentially your job, right? I mean, he has access to all that information that you and I don't. So how could you not, how could you ignore all that? How do you not know that? I mean, we get all kinds of information from our listeners talking about, you know, things that, articles and so forth that talk about, you know, this debt ratio and somebody's writing this up or that up. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it, but it's not like we don't hear about it. Can you imagine the difference in people writing him at CNBC than people writing us? It's got to be like light years difference. I mean, we had a...
Exactly, yeah. And I think we're more aware, being in the Midwest, of the people that are struggling with mortgages or subprime car loans.
We had a... I guess, in retrospect, should have noticed the stuff in 2008 a little bit more than most, because we had a client, still have a client, who's, you know, all over the place. And he was the first guy to lose $1 million in a mortgage thing at Bear Stearns in like early 2007.
Wow.
And, I never put two and two together and said, well, gee, Bear Stearns is going under. I mean, I mean, why would anybody even think of such a thing? But I have to believe that, other than, you know, word from clients or people from the show, that the people at CNBC must have incredible more feelers out than I do, or maybe they don't listen like we do. I don't know. I mean, something's weird because, I mean, my point is that the guy's become a total lapdog for this dude. But that's what you have to do when you work for him, obviously. I mean, you know, I mean,
we just lost the head of Homeland Security.
Yep.
And I still can't figure out why.
She got tired of him bitching at her, basically, I think. I don't know.
Well, almost everything I read this morning, it was that Stephen Miller convinced him that she was the problem with the border.
How could she be the problem?
I don't know. The biggest problem I see right now is that we have 45,000 kids that we have 2 years. We need to identify where they came from and who they belong to. How's that happen?
I don't know.
Even kidnappers do a better job of keeping track of who they have.
You would think.
I realize that's rather caustic, but I'm stunned that they took away 45,000 kids in a year. And can't connect.
Our absolute incompetency all across the board and all this stuff. Carol was talking about the amount of people that are in these bureaucracies. And he's talking about hospitals and he's talking about insurance companies. And the question is, Frank, what do we do? These were, I don't know if you listened on Friday, but, Carol was spot on. He says, what do you do with all these people? It's not like, it's hard for me to say anything bad about everybody has some talent. Like, it's not like they don't. But what do you do if the state of California lays off, they got, 10 people that work for the universities for every professor? What if you say the number should be 7, which to most people's eyes would be outrageous, and you lay off, 30,000 people? I mean, or what if...
I have no idea.
What if every... Everybody who goes to the doctor for the next year pays cash. All of a sudden, your deductible is bigger, but the prices come down, and everybody just pays cash. And every time you go there, 5 pieces of paper don't have to go back and forth for people in the doctor's office and people in the insurance company to play with. And you could lay off all those
people. What if we just had single pricing?
Well, I'm saying...
Transparent pricing.
No, I'm not... I got another way I'm going with this, which obviously is not obvious to everybody. What is the skill level? I mean, what do you do with 50,000 bureaucrats? It's not like these people are going to go out and start painting houses and insulating homes this weekend. I mean, what other thing that you do? These are jobs people go into and they do something all day long. Nobody goes to work and does nothing, I don't think. But at the end of the day, you're like, what have you gained with all this? Like Carl says, it's overhead, it's something, it's bureaucracy, it's whatever it is. It's a drag on everything else. I mean, the idea.
And you're exactly right about colleges.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking that I could go into the accounting office at Notre Dame when you and I went there, and I would know there'd maybe be 20 people in that room on the first floor of the main building, the Golden Dome, for people that don't know. And I'd know the top three people, and parents of friends of mine were in there, and they'd been there for 30 years. And they did it manually. How big is that department now?
I bet it's bigger.
Oh, probably, what, four times bigger? Who knows?
That's the interesting part of the new technology. And I don't know what jams it up, whether it's not going to accuse people, email, something. But the I read this comparison, got his ways back, and there was a guy who was the Speaker of the House, and they picked a date, you know, 1967 or some crap, you know, whatever it was, and the guy had something like 10 or 15 essentially middle-aged women from Washington working for him. They had typewriters, they had copying machines, and they had carbon paper. And my numbers are a little off, obviously, because I read this thing a long time ago. They're talking about how many bills they put through Congress in the 2 years, 3 years he was Speaker. They compared it to, like, you know, 2001 or whatever, whenever all of a sudden they've got everybody all this stuff, 2010. The guy now has 100 people or something, and they put out like a third as many bills. With all the modern conveniences, no typewriters, no mimeograph machines, no copying machines, no carbon paper. What do they do all day? The efficiency, you would think that the efficiency would be dramatically better with all this stuff. And in some people's hands it is, and other people's it isn't. I don't know if they fill their day up with emails or what they do, watching football, basketball. I mean, I don't know. But the efficiency that you would think would be there isn't necessarily there. You would think that every alderman now, instead of having three people working for him, would have two. But they don't. They still have three. Or maybe four or five. Am I right? I mean, but the point is, I mean, it's somewhere along the line we're going to have to have a come to Jesus meeting. This building over here, 175 West Jackson, we used to be in the, we had a bunch of offices there because when they remodeled a place, we kind of moved from place to place. But we've been in our happy home here for probably 12 years. But I still know most of the security guys over there. Like, what are we going to do when we declare victory against terrorism? They must have 15 people on the payroll, maybe 20, in a building. You walk in, there's a guy at every entrance, and there's got to be six entrances, and there's a guy in the middle. And you're like, okay, they stand there, they're good guys. But what an absolute waste on society. What a waste of people's time. Right? I mean, it isn't if somebody runs into blow.
Yes.
But I mean, collectively, I mean, the 280,000 people or something we have in law enforcement, and obviously you always want to have policemen and so forth. But the fact is, it's got to be 100,000 over at 9/11, right? Especially if you look at private security firms and buildings. And the people are doing the best they can. They're doing what they're asked to do. But it's an incredible total waste of manpower on society, right? Standing there waiting for somebody to blow something up. Am I right or not? I mean, how many more security?
You're right. But then, what would our employment percentage be? Unemployment percentage? Well, it wouldn't be 3.8.
Well, the question, Frank, comes down to if there is in economics. Okay, the school of if you just do the numbers. And you do all the theory that I learned, which, by the way, a lot of the theory isn't working out so hot. Well, a lot of it isn't. I mean, certainly the theory about trade with other countries, that the other countries would get better, and all of a sudden the world would be better for it. I mean, I have no complaint with our current president that somehow we just keep feeding money to these places, and where is it all going? I mean, his idea that something's wrong is certainly... Not anything that he's wrong about. I mean, how much money have we given to Libya? The place is still, there's a war today there, right? I mean, there's a lot of dough. We probably could have, but the point is the idea economically is, and this is the theory for everybody who's listening. If all of a sudden I get a new invention, you know, Frank and I and Maddie are making buttons, okay, and we all of a sudden get a new machine that allows us to make, you know, two buttons when we used to make, or make 10 buttons when we used to make 8. Okay, the theory of that is that because you become more efficient, you maybe don't need all the people you have. But because you are more efficient, the people who you have that are now making more buttons per person probably participate in some of that new excess, right, Frank? So they're going to make, mm-hmm. they're going to make more, all right? And then you're going to lay off some people. Now, those people, because the people now, the remaining people are making more, they're going to spend more on something else. So somebody else somewhere should be hiring, correct? Or somebody laid off is going to say, I see a need for this thing we have that's more efficient in the button manufacturer. I can turn that around and make it better for the trading community or something, whatever, you know. And so a couple of those people are going to become entrepreneurs, and they're going to do something different that the other people in the button place that are making more money now can turn around and buy from them. And any kind of efficiency move up should be good for everybody. Correct? I mean, that's the theory.
Theoretically.
That's the theory. Because not only will the savings be passed on to other people, but you don't have the supermarket phenomenon where the person at the cashier is making $8 an hour, and all of a sudden the equipment makes them do, you know, twice as many people, same period of time, and now they're making $9 an hour. I mean, you really don't have that phenomenon. But that's kind of an unusual phenomenon, because when you had a cash register, it was a skill position. But right now, pretty much anybody can do it. So some of the new innovations have not worked out like the theory has said they would, correct? Because now anybody
can. A lot of the theories don't work. You know, we could start with the informed consumer. If capitalism truly favors the informed consumer, then why do we have marketing and advertising to disinform us? I had to listen to that conversation from my sons yesterday. Gosh.
Well, but it's that's true. That's true. And I mean, and I think
especially, and we'll just limit it to prescription drugs, because that's what we were talking about.
Well, that's right. And so I will say this though, Frank. In that regard, your sons and you and me and Mr. Weber and most of our listeners are thinking. We think everybody, you get this failure on just about everybody's part. You think everybody's got the same deal you do. I have a feeling that your sons, if they go to the doctor, are going to somebody pretty good. And I have a feeling that you do as well. And hopefully we do, and the rest of the listeners. If you're in, you know, West Virginia, I'm not so sure that your doctor knows about the next, you know, iteration in an arthritis drug or whatever. You know, I mean, I'm not so sure that some people don't get this information from TV.
Oh, I think they do. The areas you're talking about had no problem finding about Purdue Pharmaceuticals' new product. They're better opioid.
Yeah, yeah.
Look,
that's right. yeah. So, well, I mean, this is. I'm saying these theories. In the short term, a theory is a theory, but in the long run, I don't know that you. If all of a sudden you got rid of, well, take the amount of how many people are there in what do you guys check your crap at the airport, TSA. There's like 60,000 TSA agents. So what happens if we get, you know, President Trump or the next guy says, you know what, there's no more ISIS, we don't really need, you know, a cavity search for we get on a plane, and we're gonna fire half these guys. First of all, it'll never happen. But if it did, what are those guys going to go do? If that's been your job for 20 years, I mean, what is it? Unless you happen to be a woodworker on the weekends or something, or happen to be a welder from ways gone by, theoretically, everybody would save $20 on every ticket or $10 on every ticket. Somebody's paying for it, right? I mean, well, how that all works out between the airlines and the government, I have no idea. But the fact is, somebody's paying these people's salary, right? So say it comes down to $20 a ticket. Well, how many travelers do you have per year? That's a hell of a lot of money that people can now spend on something else. What's it going to be?
Yeah, I would posit that perhaps the insurance companies would raise the insurance on for the airlines to 10 or 20 bucks a ticket.
Well,
that dollar's not going to be freed up.
Well, I think it probably would be. I mean, if you actually did have peace in our time, why would you pay? I mean, I'm saying the...
it's not going to go to consumer. It may go to the airline company, but I don't see it going
eventually,
to consumer.
Well, now we're into is the airline community a free market? The answer is no. But it's a half-assed free market. Some of it'll trickle down. I mean, the whole 20 bucks would drop normally, but in theory. But so say you save 15 on a ticket because there's going to be some security. But the point is, what are all these people going to do? Are they going to go from one? One side of the aisle to the other. I mean, I was looking last Friday, and we talked about these labor numbers. They came out and the market jumped and so forth, which is fine. We're right back into this. Whatever goes on in the world, it doesn't matter. We're going to pour money in the system, and the market will be safe, even though the rest of the world is not. Well, okay, it's interesting, and so far they've been right, so you can't really argue with them. But you look at this thing. I mean, look at the misinformation, Frank. Just in the terms of the unemployment number, when you've got a president bleating like a sick dog about or a sick pig. All right, the unemployment's here. You look at these numbers. It has nothing to do anymore with unemployment. It has to do when you talk about unemployment. You talk about there's 156 million people last month that are employed. Okay, there's 6.2 million people, 156 million people employed, 6.2 million people unemployed, and 95 million other. All right, so the real number is there's 156 million people employed, and there's 101 million people that aren't. Or they are, they're underground, they're someplace. Now, whether you flip 300,000 or 400,000 a month into the unemployed versus we don't know what they are column is probably the most useless exercise. My first economics class in Notre Dame, I was a sophomore. First thing the guy said is his unemployment rate is useless. Here I am 50 years later, not quite, and it's still useless, right? I mean, look, here's the number.
Looking for utility in the unemployment rate.
Yeah, I mean, these are the basic numbers that are we're talking about in our stuff. There's 258 million people in this country that are available for employment. It means they're over 16 and they're not incarcerated. There's 162 million people that are in the civilian labor force. So in other words, there's 90 some other million people that are under 16 or something. So there's 156 million that are employed, there's 6 million that are unemployed, and there's 95 million that are other. So whether you bang a few people...
They aren't actively looking for jobs.
Well, okay, so if you go from a panic situation, which is, 28 weeks, where the federal government pays more for the unemployment, I think what's happened is the bureaucrats, Frank, have decided that the people who are on unemployment are looking, and people who are not on unemployment are by definition not looking. So if you drop the unemployment from 28 to 14 because we're no longer in a crisis mode, and you boot those people off the rolls, if you're shortcutting the counting of the people that are looking and just say if you're not getting a check, you're not looking, you automatically drop your unemployment rate. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is insane. Because you really need to call all these 95 million other people and say, by the way, are you guys looking for a job? If the answer is yes, they should be in the column next to them, right? S&P Futures, still down 275. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber and the board. We have Mr. Frank Fahey, and we also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill called in to talk a little bit about basketball. Well, I'm going to hit him up with an employment thing for a second first, as I always do. S&P futures down 2.25, NASDAQ futures down 475. We have Dow futures down 74, so we're leaking a little bit, but nothing major.
Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 32.2%, FTSE up 7, all that flat, CAC around up 6, all that flat, so quiet day in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 45.2%, Shanghai down 1, call that flat, Hang Seng up 140, that's 0.5%, so not much going on there either. Oil, however, up again, 63.35, it's up 27 cents, it's as high as we've seen it in really quite a while. Brent over 70, 70.66, RBOB gas 197, call it 198, 197.8, pushing $2. That's not good if you're a driver. We got gold up 610, back over 1300, 1301. Silver up 5 cents, 1513. Maybe we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a couple of issues to report. The Dragon Memorial I-88 eastbound. Just before the Tri-State Tollway, there's a crash blocking the center lane. This is causing significant congestion on I-88, so keep that in mind. It's affecting the Tri-State as well. And so out west, off to a slow start if you're coming in from the western suburbs or near the Tri-State there. Not too far from there, just to the north, it looks like we have a crash with injuries. Meacham Road at Route 390 on the tollway there, and so we'll get more information on that soon, I imagine, but it just says crash with injuries as crews arrive on the scene there. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson have normal traffic volumes. They're becoming heavy, but they're at least normal. Southside expressways are looking okay. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day for the Cubs home opener. White Sox have an afternoon game as well, so if you're heading to either ballpark this afternoon, you should enjoy a nice spring day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 62 near the lakefront. Could reach the low 70s further inland, though. So lots of sunshine and mild temperatures, which will be nice. Right now, it is mostly clear and 55 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 97 today. As the Valley of the Sun earns its nickname beginning this week. Right now it's clear and 62 degrees in Phoenix. In sports, Cubs continue to struggle. They lost 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee, falling to the Brewers 4-2. Their home openers this afternoon against Pittsburgh, who's also playing very well. White Sox were blown out at home by the Mariners 12-5. Diamondbacks lost a pitcher's duel to the Red Sox 1-0. So as we take a look at the Major League Baseball standings, just over a week into the season, the Cubs are 2-7, 5.5 back of first place Milwaukee. The White Sox are 3-5, 3 back of first place Detroit. And the Diamondbacks are 5-5, right at 500. They're 3 games back of the Red Hot Dodgers. So very early, but not a great start for either of our baseball teams. NBA basketball, Suns were blown out by the Rockets 149-113. Bulls were off. The Notre Dame women fell 1 point short last night in the national championship game. They lost to Baylor 82-81, trailed by as many as 17 before storming back, but they fall 1 point short in that one. Men's game is tonight. That's an 8:20 Central Time tip-off. Virginia versus Texas Tech. The Cavaliers are a 1.5 point favorite. Chief.
Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Frank.
Hey,
good morning, Kevin.
Bear with me 1 second here, guys, on these unemployment numbers. Wait, and then we'll talk some hoops and refereeing. just to show everybody when all the bleeding of the big bazoos we have in our politicians, both Democrats and Republicans. These are the stark numbers since 2010, which was the worst year. Unemployment rate made 9.6%. Blah 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 blah. And we actually were down almost 1 million people in employment. But in 2010, we had 237 million people in the non-institutional population, okay? Last month, we've got 258, so we're up 21. Right? Out of those, in the workforce, we went from 154 million to 163. So we're up 9. Now, the amount of people working, we're up from 139 to 156, which is 13, right? 17, sorry. Unemployed went from 14.8 million down to 6. So we dropped 8 million people in officially unemployed. This is when we had however many weeks we had unemployment and all stuff. But get a load of this. The column we don't count, the not in workforce, not knowing what the hell they do. We think they're not looking for a job, we're not sure. Went from 83 million to 95. So all we did was push those 8 million people, and then some, into this other column. Now, I think the employment picture in our area is clearly better than in 2010. But I think if you count around the rest of the country, the people who dropped off the rolls like forever are either disabled, allegedly disabled, drugged up, drunk, or whatever, the number's up dramatically. So if you look at this table, I don't know that you can find a whole hell of a lot of improvement. Clearly here you can. I don't know, in West Virginia or Alabama, you can. I think you went the other way because the numbers don't lie. The numbers aren't any better, really. Anyway, forget all that. We'll talk about that. We can always talk about that. So how do you want to be a referee today, Kevin? First, we couldn't wait to let Duke run over people. Then the guy calls a 3.1 yesterday, and he made all three. Wow. And all of a sudden, the game was over.
Well, I don't have a problem with the foul call on Kyle Guy. He was fouled.
Okay.
I agree, too.
And the guy, he's in the air. The ball had not left his hands, and the guy's bumping him at the thigh level. That's going to throw your shot off. I mean, it's not just incidental. It's a real foul. Now, there's also been a lot of discussion about the missed traveling call that set up that play. And indeed, it was. The guard Ty Jerome was bringing the ball up court for Virginia's last gasp, and he lost his dribble, grabbed the ball two-handed, and then started to dribble again. So that should have been a traveling call. But before the traveling call, what's their names? You remember the opponent? We've forgotten them already.
The Auburn
defender tried to intentionally foul him. The ref didn't call that. Then they didn't call traveling. Then they called the intentional foul. They didn't call it an intentional foul. They called the foul that the guy was trying to do because he had one to give and wanted to waste some time and give him side out. At that point, the foul was a bad idea because he was flustered and he was ready to just heave one from midcourt. And then finally, Virginia took the ball side out. They got a shot to Kyle Guy and the foul, and he made the 3 points. He made the three free throws.
It was
a very bad sequence of officiating.
I have no bitch at all about the foul being called because he certainly was not allowed to come down or anything, and that's how people get hurt. But somehow or another, they need to get all these guys on the same page. We're either going to call something in the last 30 seconds or we're not. And clearly the guy on Duke ran through everybody, the God Savior of basketball. What's his name, Williamson or something? Zion Williamson?
Yeah,
I really
don't like that guy, do
you? A Nike employee, right?
Yeah, a Nike employee. According to the,
not him, his mom.
Not his mom. I think we've been speculating on the show forever.
Although so far the only source for that is Avenatti, and I don't think he's been an extremely good source of this year. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying, I really want to get another source on this one.
I would too. I would say this: if Adidas, or however you pronounce the damn thing, felt the need to do all the dirty things they did, is there any chance in your guys' economic minds that Nike and Under Armour are purer than Pharaoh's wife?
Sure, there's a chance.
Is there a chance of you and I being jockeys this afternoon, too, or what?
Yeah, sure. There's an ever so slight chance.
On what? The Clydesdale?
For me, I'll
bet against that one.
On what? A Clydesdale, Clydesdale race?
On that one.
Yeah, Clydesdale race? I mean, what are we talking about?
So, no, do I believe they're clean? No, of course not. It's a corrupt industry, not just a corrupt company.
But the idea that is our one of our contributors of the show who go nameless, they used to tutor a kid down in Florida. He said the world's nicest kid. He said he had some trouble with math, but he was a hell of a football player. One day, the old man comes back with a brand new Ford F-150. I mean, a lot of the stuff is going to family members, going to jail. I'll tell you what, I don't know where the line is, though, guys. If Matty Weber's got a terrific job, but say he didn't. He had some kid who wanted to go to, his kid was a great athlete and he wanted to go to, Northwestern or wherever we wanted him to go. I won't always use Notre Dame. And all of a sudden he says, my dad just needs a job. He never missed a day in his life. The guy's a welder, blah, blah, blah. And we just happened to have a welding place and we hired a guy and we give him the same wage as everybody else. He shows up every day. I don't see the harm in that, do you? I mean, it's a real job. I mean, and it's, what did John Wayne say in McClintock? Nobody owes anybody. You give me a day's pay, I give you a day's wage. Nobody owes anybody. That's the beauty of it. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, that is how it should work. However, if you're creating an extra benefit, see, this when you build on a faulty premise, then you have to create crazy rules to prop it up.
Well, that's true. That
exactly. And Tom, if you remember
that they are just student athletes participating in an extracurricular activity in front of 80,000 people who are paying over $100 a ticket.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to buy that premise, then you know you're going to have to engineer rules that that support it.
Go ahead, Frank. We cut you off.
No, if you remember, on the floor, we'd have the Purdue grad would hire the Illinois basketball star, and the Illinois grad hired the Purdue star.
You sound like
a summer job. And we've seen this happening our whole life.
You sound like an alderman. If you go to an alderman's thing now, you give a contribution to an alderman in, like, New York, and then when you go to his, they give the contribution here.
Same exact thing. So before we let these guys go and bring on Stephanie, we have to get Kevin's thoughts about last night's women's title game and then a prediction for tonight.
Well, let me see. Thoughts about last night's women's game, it was disappointing as a fan of that team. And it did come down to, like the Virginia game did, it came down to two free throws to tie the game and send it to overtime. And with Lauren Cox out, and with for Baylor because she injured her knee, and I can't remember her name.
And the freshman, was it Jackson?
Her replacement fouled out.
Jackson, right?
I would have liked the Irish chances in overtime, but unfortunately, Ogunbowale missed the first free throw and then tried to miss the second one, and it went in. How often do you see that? You know, it happens way more than it. One might think when you intentionally try to miss so that you can get a rebound and a putback.
Well, you have to hit the rim, right?
And it goes in anyway.
Yeah. You have to hit the rim. You can't just whack it off the backboard, right?
That's correct.
I think she tried to hit the back of the iron.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking you probably need to hit the front of the iron.
Well,
with your line drive.
You have to hit there. You can't miss the whole rim. Or else you're
supposed I'm not the person to be asking about intentionally missing a free throw because I have enough problem making them on purpose.
Well, but if you let one roll around, I noticed Kevin is, well, once the one girl was out and they only had one, I'll use the term big on the other team.
Big, 6 foot seven.
Oh yeah, she was unbelievable. But I mean, but when she was just by herself, You could do something with her, but when the other girl was in there as well, it was hopeless.
Oh yeah, and they're both really good players, and I know Notre Dame was one of the finalists for Lauren Cox when they were recruiting her. They really wanted her too, so you can sort of you can see why last night.
I feel really bad for her because she has type 1 diabetes, and when actually wears the pump while she's playing. Now she's got to go through surgery where she's going to be out, and putting people under anesthesia that have diabetes issues is not good surgery anyway.
Huh? Well, but if it's knee surgery, it won't be general.
No, I'm saying, but it's everything is dicier when you have diabetes. Your recovery time, your healing time, and she just kind of came down on it. I mean, it didn't look like, it wasn't like she went flying under the stands or anything. I mean. It's a shame. I mean, and she's a senior.
Well, yeah, and for women, there's a physiology that's working against them that makes ACL tears much more frequent in those circumstances that look pretty innocuous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a interesting year from both, and like they say, they've been. I thought it was pretty enjoyable. You know what? I noticed, Kevin, and I don't know if this is. You see a lot different when guys go in for layups. Even guys like me that couldn't jump much, you always go in with two hands, expecting to get whacked. So you get whacked on your top hand, you sort of absorb it, and you still have the ball in your bottom hand, you still put the layup. The girls don't do that. They always go in with one hand. So any little touch, and they're missing those layups. Is that because they don't feel they get up strong enough with the two hands, or they want to get there faster? But everybody just goes in, and you see the ball coming out with the one hand, but and all of a sudden any little thing, and they miss. I mean,
Are they taught that, or is it just natural, or what? It just seems different.
No, I think there's a natural inclination amongst a lot of players to not play through contact, but to try and avoid it. And I see that pretty often on the men's side too, and it drives me nuts because a good example is Notre Dame's Rex Pfluger. He's a good free throw shooter. And he so often tries to avoid contact by making the near impossible move, when if he just go through it, he's strong enough to get some shot, get the shot anyway in many cases and draw the foul. But even if he doesn't, he'll get the foul, he'll go to the free throw line. He's about an 80% free throw shooter. And instead, you try this, you try a much more difficult shot to avoid contact and it doesn't go down.
So, Kevin, I would say that the opposing coach, I think, could be your future ex-wife. The Southern Barbie doll look on.
Kim Mulkey was reserved last night. I have seen her. I've actually seen her in person, like throwing her jacket and that kind of, and getting technicals and all that. Let's put it this way, the stormy relationship would be a whole lot of fun until the stabbing began.
I have a feeling there would be not many dull moments with that lady. Just saying, doesn't make her bad, but boy, oh boy, she's fiery. Anyway,
she's a good coach.
All right, what do you think about tonight, real quick, before we throw you?
Oh, let me see. I want Virginia to win, so we'll go with that. It will be an interesting contrast in styles because so watch that. See if Texas Tech is able to play faster and Virginia is able to keep the pace slower because that's what they do. Virginia gets typecast as not a very good offensive team because of their style play, but they're very, very efficient in what they do. And they rank real high in, things like the KenPom efficiency ratings. If I bet with my heart, which I probably will, I will say Virginia. And leave it at that. And part of it is, it's not that I'm madly in love with Virginia or anything, but I do respect the way they run the program there. It's one of the few ACC teams because I think Notre Dame's affiliation with the ACC has been embarrassing. It's one of the few ACC teams that, that I really respect. They're not tied to any academic fraud. They're not tied. They're not doing one and duns. They are running a good, solid program with well coached players. So let's go with Virginia.
The quote of the weekend was your buddy Charles Barkley, where somebody asked him
he
about.
He is fun, isn't he?
Yeah, they asked about Auburn, and he said, "Enjoy it. It's a basketball game. It's not world peace. Just enjoy it. It's just a basketball game." And you know what? He's right. The Irish girls, the other girls, what an incredible performance they put on. And to a certain extent, obviously we'd like to see the Irish girls win. It almost doesn't matter, Kevin. It was one hell of an evening watching them, and it was a great journey for both teams. So,
really, both Final Fours have been fantastic, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway.
Wonderful.
These other guys have kicked ass on everybody, though. This Texas Tech.
Texas Tech's been an underdog like their last three games, and they've won relatively easily if you've watched. They've really controlled against Michigan, Gonzaga, and Michigan State.
I think it'll be a good one. Kevin, thank you. Talk to you on Wednesday.
All right, gentlemen, carry on.
Yes, carry on, as they say. So, Frank, Steph, you with us? We'll hang on to Frank. We're doing good. How about you?
I'm good.
You're in fine voice this morning. Let's get Frank's take on the market here, and then we'll boot him. Frank, what do you think? We got smoothed down a little bit. We've had nothing but straight up. I don't. My one concern on the market with what the Fed and Trump are trying to do, and I just going to go back to the Fed thing for a second. I will say this: they had two people on debating him on him trying to pack the Fed. Now is one guy was saying, "Well, this is going to destroy the whole thing," and the fact that they got this cloistered little group. I've been basically ragging for as long as I could talk that this current Fed is so head up the ass of so many of these banks that there needed to be a change. Now, maybe the two people that Trump's putting on there wouldn't be my first choices, and I don't trust Trump's judgment all that much. But I'm not so sure that his view of the situation is much different than mine. Every mistake that's been made in the market since back to 1965 has been caused by these guys. It's not like
they've done such a spectacular job, Frank. I mean, you know, to where we can say one other guy on there is going to so screw things up because they've been so perfect. I mean, where am I wrong?
Yeah, but this is going to be more of the same. I mean, his voice desire to have more rate cuts, I probably whatever they do would be wrong. I'm starting to believe that.
Well, they want.
I've been listening to you too long, Tom.
Well, they want to mark it up. Now, my concern is that he's starting with what, 18 months, 19 months to go. I don't know. I think he's starting too early. I don't know if they can manipulate it for 18 months.
I think, like along Frank's line, that I don't disagree with you that a lot of these guys have been probably too attached to banking interests. But I think now, instead of banking interests, we've got two who are attached to Trump's interests, and not necessarily the interests of the country. So I think that's where my concern comes into place.
Well, but you know what? Why wouldn't he be, Steph and Frank? I'm just playing devil's advocate. Why wouldn't the man be emboldened? Look in this country. How many people? I don't know what the psychology is. And where's Dr. Blade when we need him? I don't know what the psychology is with this situation with Mueller. He puts this report in. The guy comes up with the 4-page summary. Okay. Now the guy who gave the summary absolutely was put there in Trump's mind to torpedo this report because he couldn't count on Sessions to do it. Anybody who thinks otherwise? Now whether the thing
the word is obstruct. Tom,
yeah. Yeah, the word is obstruct.
Torpedo.
Okay. So maybe, but then again, Mueller didn't come out with anything apparently that awful either. So. And most people now are just over it. They're just over it. It's like the hanging chads thing in Florida.
Statistically, they're not. Most people want, they are over listening to what, about the 4-page report, but they want to see, I think it's like 53% of the population wants to actually just see the report.
Okay, but now are they going to vote on that? If they don't see it, are they not going to vote for Trump?
Well, I mean, I don't know. His approval ratings are in the 30s and 40s at the moment, so if we look at the numbers, I don't know whether they're comparable or not.
They certainly haven't gone up.
Right.
His approval ratings with the release of the Mueller report.
Or release of that, the 4-pager. They haven't changed at all.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is on the one side, on people that are, quote, single-issue voters, in this particular case, it might just be as simple as I hate liberals, and some of the liberals are giving them a good reason to think that way. But anyway, I would say they hate liberals, or they don't like minority, whatever it is. They don't like whatever. If you're a single issue voter, this isn't going to change.
Vote on this issue on the Mueller. Like, the Mueller issue has been determined is not a key flip flop
right.
issue for people's decisions on voting.
Correct. That's my point. So when you say 55-60% of people want to see it. Okay, they want to see it, but if they don't see it, is it going to change their vote? I would say for most people, no.
I don't know.
If they do see it, will it change their vote?
Exactly. That's kind of more the way I see it.
Well, I mean, what do you guys think? We're going to get a last question for Frank. And what do you guys think is actually, I mean, I was on record, you guys were here, you know, about 3 months ago. So the report is going to come out with incredibly bad judgment on picking people. His people were all over these Russian guys, but never really culminated in anything. There's a lot of money flying back and forth with his companies, but none of it reaches the point of indictment. So here you are, and it probably didn't influence the election. And by the way, Hillary was having a bunch of dirty tricks too. So I'm saying, isn't that pretty much exactly where it came out?
We don't know because they haven't read the report. We only have the interpretation
exactly.
of somebody that has a preconceived or a pre-influenced position on whatever was come out, and basically all the supporting people who wrote the report don't agree with the assessment that we've been given. So I'll
go with that, but do you think if there was something specifically indictable that Mueller would have come out that milquetoast on his conclusion?
I don't know what you think, Frank, but I think Mueller basically knew that what even if he did come out with something indictable, that it was going to be argued by the new attorney general that the president couldn't be indicted, so there was no point in putting it in there. He wanted to let it be on somebody else's shoulders.
I think he passed it on to the Southern District of New York, the Fed
That's
court there.
Yep.
Well, it's probably...
He went around, because he knew going forward wasn't going to get him anywhere.
Well, he just replaced there, too. He can, what, pre... What was his guy's name? Pete Barrera or Bahara or something?
Right.
But the new guy is more aggressive, I think, than Trump would have liked. Because Trump doesn't want him to do anything with it. Anyway, Frank... Thank you very much, bud. Talk to you later in a week if the market keeps jumping around.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Take care. The are we doing break here, Maddie, or what are we doing? All right. So, Steph, how are things by you? Good?
Yeah, doing well. How are you?
All right. We were talking about you yesterday, not in any bad terms, but I was mentioning that you work for some big companies in consulting work. And I was trying to track down the, you know, inflation and some things that I just had seen in the last few days. We went to dinner at a couple of places I've been going a long time, and how I thought in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, most of the items on the menu are up 20% to 25%, and it's not 2%. You know, and you've worked for some big companies that right now are doing, without their names, are doing pretty darn well on the stock market. And I would say that if you could go through their menus and lists of services, you would find stuff in the last 3 or 4 years up dramatically. And yet we still can't seem to find a way to say that that's the truth. I mean, every day we have people that we're paying their salary telling us there's no inflation anywhere. And I just, someday, somewhere, somebody like you going to come up on a national stage and say, what do you guys count, and have the thing turn around like it did in the August of 1982, when somebody said, boy, these interest rates could go the other way. You know, we've got Fed pouring more money back in now, and I've got a firm. I was reading this thing. I didn't know if I sent it to you last night. Actually, I didn't, because I don't know if my home email, I don't think I have your email, which I should. They're now recommending, what firm this is, they're recommending big-time investors are snapping up China's junk bonds. What in God's name? BlackRock, PIMCO, and UBS are now trying to tell their people to get in these things.
Now, that seems like another big problem waiting to happen.
Yeah, I don't see. It says, in a sign of greater risk appetite by investors this year, many high yield bonds, read junk, issued by Chinese developers in the first quarter come with longer maturities, which is even more bizarre. But we're up to $20 billion with these things in the first quarter.
Yeah, I was out talking to a bunch of hedge fund folks over the weekend, and they were mentioning that they were putting together a bunch of new funds for high yield situations. And I was asking them basically, "Hey, well, where are there high yield situations? Because I'm not familiar with many high yield situations that are, in general, investable by the average investor." And they were kind of going through some kind of, I don't know, bizarre is not the right word, but some definitely higher risk sectors of the economy where they're putting these funds together for. And I'm not sure. They should not go to the general public. They're not, the risk reward spectrum on them, I can only imagine based on what they're based on, is just way too high, I think, for the average investor. But that's my personal opinion, and we'll see what the regulators do.
Well, it says in total, Asia saw issuance of around $20 billion in U.S.-denominated high-yield bonds in the first quarter, more than double that in the same period last year. But the idea is China is in so much better shape than last year. Where are they getting that from? How could that even be possible that China all of a sudden is in better shape? Just because the government's been pouring money into the place, I don't...
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, that's the thing about China, is because of their economic situation and their political situation, they pretty much have a lot more controls over changing how their economy wins, but that just means they're printing more money a lot of times, and that doesn't necessarily help the situation. So, yeah, I don't see that as a good investment scheme, but, maybe I'm missing something.
Steph, do you know, and I'm going to hit you up with something here, you're not supposed to ask a question of anybody unless you think they know the answer, but you just might. I mean, here, the Fed, well, we thought they had three different tools to control the money supply. Obviously, the open market operations and your discount rate and the reserve requirements. But they, in my mind, are in danger of losing some of that control when they're driving the loan, some of the loans out of the system. But pretty much here, I'd say most of the loans are still in the system. To where they're still, I think, can be pretty effective in what they do. In China, you've got regional banks. You've got the huge equivalent of what payday loan places, although they don't call them that over there. I don't know how the central bank retains control over it anyway. And now these bonds are all dollar denominated, so they're coming directly from developers. Now, my two questions. One is, how, if they even wanted to, how could they control that? And B, if you decided to, what regulatory, I'll say, responsibility, even if they are set up like we are, which I don't think they are, does the China Central Bank have to, quote, regulate these particular bonds if they're not even in their own currency, they're coming to us directly? And suppose you get one of these, and all of a sudden one day your interest check doesn't come and you're checking the mail and it's not there, and they just say, you know, bleep you, Steph. Where do you go with that? I mean, you can't expect the Chinese Central Bank to come down on these guys regulatorily. I mean, you essentially went around them with that investment, didn't you? I mean, where am I wrong here?
I don't think you're wrong, but I think investors at this point are looking, you know, if they're going to get 20% and 20% for 6 months, it's better than not getting 20% anywhere. So I think they're taking the risk that, you know, okay, so even if it's a 10-year whatever, 6 months is better than nothing. But that would be a guess. And then as for, I don't think the federal government in China necessarily needs to use their central bank. They can give the developer money through all sorts of different programs directly, which I think is how they support a lot of other things, which is, you know, I mean, there's inevitably a lot of corruption and a lot of bribes that go on in China, and some people seem to get caught for that and some people don't. I think it's got to do with, you know, how in favor or out of favor you are with the government. But I think that the government goes around their own system to support some of these things in order to keep certain industries and certain things afloat. I mean, you know, why is the Chinese government A, number one for solar panels?
Oh, yeah.
They have warehouses of solar panels that they've made without a market to put them into, because they were supporting a whole industry there in terms of, you know, developing and building them, and they thought it was kind of a way of the future. So they do this with certain industries, and, you know, I can't speak specifically to what you're talking about, but my guess would be they have other mechanisms to support these kinds of things, assuming they want to, but they have no legal responsibility, so...
Where did you get the number of 20%?
20% for what specifically?
You were saying that these junk bonds were going to pay that high.
No, I said I pulled that number out. It was just a guesstimate of where they're going. I don't know. I don't know how high they are.
Well,
I'm guessing if they're, based on the returns that I was talking to from hedge fund folks, that was where they were. They were trying to get to 15 to 20% returns for some of their new hedge funds. So I'm guessing that that's the range where
Steph, that you're maybe a little wrong there. The reason why I asked that.
I could be.
The reason why I asked that is, if, let me start from the beginning here, which I should do when I talk about something that's somewhat complicated. When Michael Milken invented, we didn't invent the junk bond. I mean, there were less than investment. Junk bond is defined as one that's not investment rated, correct?
Yes.
So in some places, BB minus or whatever it happens to be. So if you happen to have the Chicago Police Pension Fund or the Fireman's Fund, probably in their charter, there is a level at which they can't invest in below. Correct, Steph? I don't really know, though, Steph, if one gets downgraded, if you can keep it, if you bought it when it was investment grade, or I don't think you have to puke it out tomorrow or next week. I mean, is there some where you get some time to do it? I don't know. Maybe those are all individual rules. I don't know. But Michael Milken essentially said, here's a third way. At the time, you either went to the big banks, which basically de-pantsed you, or he went to Solomon, Morgan, and Goldman. It was a triumvirate at the time. And they basically de-pantsed you. So he said, well, you know what, we're going to do it a different way at Lehman. And probably the real reason why he went to jail is he created an alternative that the big boys didn't want. He said, you know what, I'm going to find these firms that are going to pay, what, Steph, 10, 11% or something, where everybody else paying 6.
Yeah, well, back in the day, that was a pretty good return.
Well, but what I'm saying is there was a method to the math that he would say, I don't want you, Stephanie or Matt Weber, I don't want you buying one of these companies. I'm going to put together a package of 20 of them for you. So if you give me $2 million, essentially there's $100,000 in every one of 20 companies. Now you're going to be making 10, 10.5, 11% versus the risk-free rate of 4 or 3.5. So if 1 out of 10 goes out of business, you're still ahead of the game, right? And because they anticipated some not making it because you're less than investment grade. He put these portfolios together for you, but at 10%. That was high enough. I think, Steph, they didn't lose 1 out of 10. They lost like 1 out of 15, which means it was a spectacular investment, the way he put it together.
Right.
It was way better than the risk-free rate. So Michael Milken, in a lot of ways, is a genius. But then, of course, he got caught up with the wrong people and did some, you know, bad trading or questionable trading. Ended up going to jail for a while and having the world's worst toupee. But that won't hold that against him. But now this junk stuff has got down to where risk-free rates 1% or 2, and junk is like 6. So I don't think anybody under any circumstances wants to invest in anything junk for 6. 10 is one thing or another. You can lose 1 out of 12 and still be ahead. How do you lose 1 out of 12? You're only getting 6 to start with. So when I think what's happening when you say these guys are trying to get 15%, I think they're getting, and I don't know, my suspicion is they're getting 8 or 9, maybe 10 out of China, I doubt 10, and they're borrowing and leveraging to get the other 5. So they're going someplace and borrowing at 3% and leveraging, so the total on their investment, now if you do the math here, okay, if Steph and I have $1 million, okay, and we invest in Matty Weber's firm and we're making 10%, all right, our return is 10%. If we go borrow another $1 million at 5%, then to give that to Matty Weber as well, on our original $1 million, our return now is 20, and we're paying out 5, so it comes out to be 15, right, Steph? So
yep.
The math is you have to level. That's what happened to the mortgages here. It wasn't just people buying mortgages. It was people borrowing money other places at 1 or 2% and tripling up and quadrupling up in the mortgages. So I think for the hedge fund to get that in China, but I don't know where you go if the check doesn't show up. You go to the world court?
I think you can, but I mean, I would be surprised that there's a lot of recourse that you can, you know, I mean, I don't know what the legal terms of this are. Obviously, I mean, I'm speculating on return rates, which should be a part of all these documents if you were actually an investor. But I mean, I don't know what the legal terms are. And then, yeah, it's an international argument, so that makes it even more complicated.
So I guess you're not calling up
you through the formal banking system, which again, as we, you know, can assume, that would make it even more complicated. So, you know, your upfront return rates or what you think you're going to get on your return has to clearly outweigh the risk of not getting returns over the life of the bond.
And
okay, without understanding kind of the details of it, you can't really know whether it's something that you could take a risk on or not.
Do you think?
But I wouldn't definitely recommend it for the average investor who's not going to be able to go or put any pressure on China to return money if it doesn't go well.
I'm going to go serious south side on you for a second here, Steph. If you decided to take the Steph fortune, because I told you this morning, God, the Chief's talking about this, I'm going to call my guy at UBS and get my butt into this stuff. Do you think for a second the guy's going to give you like, we're going to be in fund A1A, like the road in Florida.
Yep.
And do you think he's going to give you some addresses where you could plunk you behind on a plane and go over there and look at them? I don't think so. You think you could?
Well, at first of all, I think the guy's not going to know what I'm talking about when I first call. He's just going to have to go find somebody who does. And
yep.
Then, yeah, no, I don't think they would have some addresses.
So, Joffrey.
So what? I mean, God, talk about the know what you're buying into. Had some Chinese developer. Have you ever met them? No, Lear, it's a pretty good number. By the way, the Chinese are back. They were out. They were under flat on their ass a month ago, but now they're fine. So let's invest in this one. God, could you? I got a bridge for you, Steph. I mean, for God's sake,
some riverfront or oceanfront property. Yeah.
Yeah, and
Arizona.
What was in Superman? It was in Las Vegas, in Nevada, because he's going to drop California into the sea. It was going to become oceanfront. Hey, so what do you think of? I mean, you do a lot of investment. What do you think of the market? We've come back strong from the last quarter of last year. The Fed is, I'll use the term, has been leashed. They're not going to go. Can we push this for 18 months up every day?
Well, they're going to try. I mean, I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to try really hard, I think. I think that's obvious by, I mean, you know, there's some interesting pointees that have been put up there. Obviously, one of the Fed, one of the IRS, which I think is another play, later on we can go into fears for this democracy. But on this particular topic, I definitely think they're going to try. They're going to use everything in their power to try and keep the economy up. It's the one thing where Trump's approval ratings are higher than everything else. It happens also to be the one thing that he hasn't been talking a lot about lately, which is interesting. So maybe saving up, or maybe he's just not that strategic at this point. But I think the fundamentals, I still have some concerns about where the market's at, and I definitely have concerns about after 18 months where we'll be, because if you've got that many people trying to influence and sort of prop this up with all of the uncertainty, and you know, Brexit's getting to be even worse, and companies are pulling out and making contingency plans and all sorts of different things with regard to that, I think I don't think it's sustainable, but that's my personal opinion.
I don't see how it could be either. I mean, with the debt just keep going up and up and up. I suspect, Steph, unfortunately, maybe we have hit. And if you're a renter, well, you just know the rents have gone up in Chicago. I think we're starting to see here the in Illinois, the canary in the coal mine, in the city first, not in the state yet. We're about to see it, I think, with the new governor. But these debts are real. I mean, and you know, you can't just assume that you've got that your federal debt per person per family has gone up 200 grand in the last 9 years, and you'll never see it. I mean, people want to believe from both parties, coming from totally different directions, they're both telling you that with their fix, it's going to be okay. I mean, the Republicans come out with the insane thing that we're going to cut taxes, but oh, by the way, the trickle down is going to be so dramatic that in 5 years the growth rate's going to be high enough to where our tax receipts are going to go up even though the tax rates are down.
Yeah, but we tried that.
Yeah.
We tried that during first Reagan economics, and that didn't work. So now, for some reason, we think the world is completely different on that matter. But, hey, you know, I guess we're going to prove ourselves wrong again. So,
Steph, how is it that you just said that? Okay. Since you were a little while ago, you were quick to go do a survey on me. I'm going to say that if I walk down the street, especially in the Republican bars, they will tell you that Reagan economics worked tremendously and totally forgot about the tax increase a year after the tax decrease. You're one of the few people on earth that knows it didn't work.
I can't speak for the other people on earth and why they don't know it didn't work, but I mean, it was impactful, incredible to my life at that point. So, you know, I was a younger kid, but my father was a mortgage broker in the secondary mortgage market, and a lot of Reagan economic policies directly hit my family and my father's business really, really hard. So, as a result, I happened to probably be maybe more in tune with the economic situations and changes that occurred, I guess, despite the fact that I was probably a younger kid at that point.
So, wait a minute, you were younger 30 years ago? How could that be?
Well, I still look the same age as I did then.
You probably look better.
True. Mass, biotechnology and lots of great cream.
It's good limits, vitamin E.
Yeah,
God.
Yeah.
But I mean,
if you believe that one, I'll sell you a bridge.
What you just said is if you are out of work, it's a depression. If somebody else is, it's a recession or depression.
Right.
Yeah. But we actually talked a little bit when we have Carl on to have this discussion. Maybe if you're able, you either got to be on the phone or come on in, because I'd like to get Carl for about 45 minutes one day and just go through the history of the Federal Reserve, you know, fiasco that ended up with Paul Volcker, who in my mind was way too heavy-handed. And he basically took out an entire industry, the savings loan industry, and he also took out the current mortgage industry. And just like I've mentioned, the idea of the people at the University of Chicago at the time, they were essentially on, if there was a Viagra for economics professors, they were giddy that the idea that this whole mortgage thing would now become this mass smorgasbord of people taking risks and risk leaving the neighborhood, and how much more efficient it would be than the savings and loans and blah, blah, blah. And it turned into pretty much a fiasco, in my mind.
It created 2008 because it took out a lot of the self-regulating, situations that really made the industry function and flow really well. So I know it crushed my father's business, so I clearly have probably some bias to it. But after 08 and seeing how and looking pretty extensively into why certain things occurred, and then working with both Fannie and Freddie at certain times in my career, it's interesting to see how a couple of regulatory changes can really destroy not just an industry, but also how economics flow in a country like ours.
Well, I was emailing back and forth with some people on Friday, and I said, why are you so attached to the savings and loan industry? I said, because at the beginning of the chain, even if the efficiently the savings and loans would have been able to package their stuff too, but if you were to make them keep 20% of the loan or something, the fact is the loan application itself, because they knew the person and knew the property, the piece of paper was way better than the piece of paper was in 2007.
Well, even today, if you look at the Federal Home Loan Banks, which is a certain entity that we never talk about, which is probably good, but Federal Home Loan Banking System is attributed to they support most of the small little local banks in all of our more rural communities, less the big ones. And when we had the crisis in 2008, they didn't have a crisis. They didn't have a problem with their lending practices. They didn't have a problem with the risk on their books. They were very stable. And so that's partly because, you know, they haven't had a lot of this regulatory change. And to your point, they support banks that work directly with the people in their communities, and they know the people in their communities, and they have the flexibility to support those people. You know, when times are tough, to make loan changes, to do a lot of these things, because they're not so corporatized, right? So it makes a big difference.
And we have this idea that we punish individuals, yet we don't punish institutions.
I mean, I don't know when that became in vogue.
I don't know what the... you know what? I mean, I saw it on the board when I was on the board of the SIBO stuff. We had rules. If pick a big firm name, I won't name anybody, although you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about, even though there's a few of them. When they broke rules, that was okay. If another member broke rules, I mean, he was going in the stocks in the town square. Well, not like guys like me. He's breaking position
limit. My industry, which is the same thing.
Yeah. But if you know, one of the big firms crossed an order and actually stole from the customer, we don't care about that, because that's just what big firms do. It's really their customer, not ours. But if somebody next to you didn't count right and was two contracts over position limit, which didn't make any difference to anybody, you know, we gotta you know, do something to that guy in the village square, hang him or something. It's just whatever you, it's just, I mean, it's, but I mean, if you look at the resolution trust, there's people on the show. I mean,
Lou and a few others. I'll say that the idea that somebody's in a house and somehow or another the house was worth $300 and then now it's worth $100 and the rule is, you, what if the guy in the house can actually buy his own house from himself for $100? Why shouldn't he be able to? Why does he have to be a third party? People look at me like I've got, you know, I got four heads when I say that. No, he lost. He had his chance. I said, well, no. You missed my point. You're selling it. You're selling Bill's house to Joe for 10 cents on a dollar, and Bill will bid you 20. Yeah, but Bill can't get back in there. He lost it. Well, why can't Bill Inc. turn around and buy the damn place? Well, why should he be able to do that? He lost it. I'm like, okay. I mean, the logic of how this all stuff works, if you look at the Resolution Trust stuff, was there any logic? All it was taking a bunch of people's money and giving it to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know a lot about that ruling, but I do understand what your point is, and I think the problem is that we're either going to be a democracy and economically driven, which then means, you know, if Bill can afford to buy his house back one way or another, through whether it's borrowing through his relatives or finding somebody to give him an off-book loan or however. I mean, does it really matter from an economic perspective who pays $100,000? It shouldn't. It just should matter that the house is sold, right? I mean, that would be the more economic view of it. So why would you regulate who can buy it? I mean, I guess some of these developers who were building houses and then claiming bankruptcy and then buying them back. I think that's what they were trying to avoid, but it doesn't.
Well, it's amazing.
From an economic perspective, it doesn't matter where the $100,000 comes from; it still goes back in the system.
Well, it's always closed. I mean, the Resolution Trust. You and I couldn't.
So, right.
You know, I'm talking around this. I might as well say what it was exactly. Is if I think Steph, I should go back and look at this. But if you had money to start with, They would loan you 80% on the dough, more. I mean, in other words, if you had $5 million, they gave you another 20 to buy stuff out of the system. But if you were the right person, they lent you the original $5 million to start out with. So, for instance, the Phoenician down in Arizona, I think that thing ended up going for 15-20 cents on the buck. Well, it's one thing if you're looking to put equity back in the system where somebody, quote, has to pay cash or something. It's quite another for you to be
leveraging again. Yeah.
Well, for you to be totally undressed in front of the Phoenician and it was your place, and the government giving me $5 million to buy something of yours that you paid 50 for, and I walk in and now I'm the new owner. I mean, it's...
Yeah, like I said, I don't know much about how this worked. But,
well, someday if you feel really good about the world and you think everything's fine, you think we've always done a great job for people and nothing's ever crooked in this country, spend about 5 hours reading about the Resolution Trust and it'll get you in a bad mood.
Oh, good. Things to look forward to.
Yeah, things to look forward to. So what does have you in a good mood? The weather's nice. I'm going to a Cub game this week, but Thursday night when it's supposed to be 40. I wouldn't mind going today, but I've never seen an opening day at 70 degrees. Have you, Manny?
Very rarely. I can only remember one time when it was really nice on Cubs home opener. And that was like probably 10 years ago.
I've gone to about 15 Sox openers. I'll bet it was like this once, maybe.
Yeah.
Usually raining, usually something. But
it's usually sleeting, actually.
Are you going to any games this week, Steph?
I did not have plans to at this point. I have an awful lot of work to do this week, so I think my ability to go out and play and do fun stuff is probably going to be limited, unfortunately.
But you would make an exception for a Skybox, I would assume.
I would make an exception for anyone who wanted to give me a ticket.
Okay. All right. Steph, thank you very much. Terrific as usual. Have a nice week. I'm sure we'll talk to you. S&P Futures down 350. NASDAQ Futures down 13. Come back, Mr. David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason.
This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Marley, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. David Andelman in a second. SP Futures down 350, NASDAQ Futures down 13, Dow Futures down 75. Over in Europe, we're slow here. Actually, DAX is down more than it was earlier. DAX down 30.3%. FTSE up 1, call that flat. CAC around up 2, call that flat. So not much action there. In Asia, Nikkei down 45.2%. Shanghai down 1, call that flat. Hang Seng up 140.5%. Big news. There's a lot of this because of the Libya situation. West Texas up 19 cents, 63.27. Brent well over 70 at 70.61. Arbob Gas 198. So a lot of stuff moving up in the oil patch.
Gold same way. Gold now up $8.30, 1303. Silver up 13 cents. Big news over the weekend is how China is moving to the, I won't use the term, hoard, start to acquire a lot of gold for some reason. I don't know if it's a currency issue or what it is, but that's the story this weekend. So you get a little bit of strength in gold. It's not real strong, but it's some strength. Big news on a stock thing today is GE's downgraded again by JP Morgan. They cut their price target to 5 from 6. Well, the stock was trading 10, and now it's trading like 9.50, so it's down about, not 10%. It's down 5% this morning, so it's actually down 61 cents, down 9.40, so call that 6%. So not good for GE, but still nowhere near close to 5. Anybody got for us for every weather sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're looking pretty good so far on the area expressways coming in on the Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. No accidents or issues to report at this hour. Stevenson and Eisenhower, heavy traffic volumes, but no accidents, so that's good news. We had that earlier crash on I-88 right at the Tri-State. That's been cleared, but still some resulting congestion coming in from the west. Edens and Kennedy are looking okay, looking normal for a Monday morning. Off the expressways, we have an accident. Northwestern suburbs, Arlington Heights Road at Lake Cook Road. There's a crash with injuries. This is apparently a serious crash that has crews on the scene. It'll be a while before that gets cleared up. Also in the city, Grand Avenue at Damon, that busy intersection there to the west of us. So there was an overturned vehicle earlier this morning. Not sure how you have an overturned vehicle on that intersection.
Well, he was only going 30.
Yeah, and authorities remain on the scene as they work to get that situated. But that's been an issue all morning in the city. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine. It's going to be a nice day for Cubs home opener at Wrigley. White Sox play this afternoon at home as well, so they'll enjoy it too. We'll reach a high of 62 close to the lake. The further inland you get, you could touch the low 70s. So very nice day. Right now it is mostly sunny and 56 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 97. Right now it's clear and 63. In sports, Cubs were doubled up in Milwaukee by the Brewers 4-2, losing 2 of 3 in that series. They host Pittsburgh today in the Wrigley 2019 opener. White Sox were blown out at home by the Mariners 12-5. Diamondbacks lost to the Red Sox 1-0. NBA basketball, Suns were blown out by the Rockets 149-113. Women's national championship game last night, it was the Irish rallying back from 17 down only to lose by 1 point to Baylor, 82-81. So the Baylor women's team is now your national champions. Irish had a chance to tie it with 2 late free throws, missed the first one and then missed the second one on purpose, or at least tried to, and it went in. So ended up losing by 1 in that one, unfortunately. The men's title game is tonight. It'll be Virginia, a 1.5 point favorite over Texas Tech. That's an 8:20 Chicago time tip.
I was listening to David. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I was listening to your hero last night, A-Rod, and he was saying that the Dodgers have not recovered from the loss of, is it Brendan Morrill? That there's still a hole in their team.
Well, now, he was their eighth inning setup guy forever and was dominant, and then the Cubs signed him to be their closer, and he was good with the Cubs until he got hurt, and now he can't even get on the field.
Now he's the hole in both teams.
That's right. But the Dodgers are still very good, went to the deep in the playoffs last year. This year they're 8-2, so I don't think they're missing them that much.
What can the Cubs still get a few draft picks for some of these guys?
I don't think they're going to be trading anybody just yet.
Something's weird. I hope they don't do something stupid like fire the coach. By the way, Quenneville got a job, huh?
Yeah, I saw that. Quenneville, it was rumored all weekend, and then I think it became official last night. He will be the next Florida Panthers coach. So good for him. He makes some more money, gets to live in some warm weather, and no one cares, so there's no pressure.
Randolph, I will say that he wins a cup down there before the Hawks win another cup.
Really?
$1.
I'll take that bet. They've never won one in their 25-year history. I would be surprised if they won one.
Well, the Hawks had won once in 61.
That's true, and they've won 3 now. Yeah, that's true. I don't think the coach matters that much. I think it's the front office that matters in getting the players. But if they have a good front office, then he's a great coach. We've seen what he can do with talent.
Well, as you know, you've heard people on the show, including me, say a million times, it's when you go and get a guy like him, it might be a total dedication to up their game from top to bottom. And if it is, it might not be the old, Florida team. Just saying, it might be a,
absolutely
might be rededication on all fronts. So anyway, David, how are you?
I'm doing fine. You have 2 minutes for something that plays into something inflation that you've been talking about forever.
Sure.
So you've been talking about the improper weighting of healthcare in the you know, statistics and whatever. So I just finished this book, a fascinating book called Deep Medicine, written by a cardiologist who is basically, in 300 pages, taking apart the influence of artificial intelligence on the healthcare system. So on 284 of his book, he talks about, you know, what's happened to the health system. The term hadn't been coined yet. Throughout the United States, there were fewer than 4 million jobs in healthcare. This was as of 1975. We spent less than $800 per patient per year for healthcare, and it accounted for less than 8% of the country's GDP. And then he says, what a difference 40 years makes. So this was as of 2015. Medicine is now a big business, the biggest business in the country. More than 16 million healthcare jobs in the United States, so quadrupled. The leading source of employment in the country and in most cities as well. And many nonprofit health systems have top-line revenues that tower into double-digit billions. From less than $800 per patient per year, we now spend more than $11,000 and over $3.5 trillion per year, approaching 19% of the gross domestic product.
So, okay, the median income is 54, so 11,000 is exactly 20%.
Right.
And it's 5.5 in the CPI.
I read this and I said, this has Chief written all over it. I have to interject that.
What, you know, we have, we were talking a little bit earlier. Carl Stern.
And that was as of 2015. So we know in 2019 it's bigger than that.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. So we were talking to Carl a little bit on Friday. And we had, I won't say one of your outfit, one of my Yiddish buddies was, all over. I mean, and I will say this, that, an awful lot of Jewish people are doctors, so they know a hell of a lot more about drugs that are in the pipeline and so forth than I ever would. So I love talking to them because it's an area, obviously you know more about it than I do, David, but there's a lot of potential cures, at least, you know, I'm gonna say in the pipeline, and, the one that clunked 2 weeks ago, the Alzheimer's cure, or cure, right. Was a help. I won't use the term cure. But we were talking with Carl on Friday regarding just plain overhead and people and what you would do if you had, say, changes. And he was talking about what if, you know, your universities and colleges and so forth went back to, I'll say, anywhere near a, quote, normal overhead rate. You know, we're in the, I'll go find the numbers tomorrow because I saw them once. The state colleges of, Berkeley and UCLA, the ones in California, I think they're over 10 employees for every professor. So that's kind of a lot, David. So if you went,
yeah,
if you went down to say 7, which would still be pretty high, it's got to be 30,000 people or some huge number. So you just, as they used to say at Pullman, you bleep can them. Okay, and I don't ever want to do that to anybody. But suppose peace breaks out. I mean, I don't know who would ever declare peace when there's money in war, but all of a sudden, all of a sudden you've got 58,000, 60,000 TSA people. Now we need 10. So you bleep can 50. What if somebody actually did, from one of my buddies telling me, you know, this doctor's working on this and that, what if somebody did come up with just a flat-ass cure for Alzheimer's? Where even somebody who's drooling on himself, can't remember his wife's name in a month, is normal. How many people countrywide would you be able to, I mean, this would be a beautiful thing. But the flip side of it is, how many people countrywide that now take care of Alzheimer's people with, like, a lot of money, and not that they're not worth it, because it's really hard to do, are out of a job? Well, what if you actually did? Somebody you could wing a pill in, and there's no longer any prostate cancer. Another pill, there's no longer any breast cancer. No longer any lung cancer.
Well, but beyond that, I mean, and this is what the whole theory, the whole thing of this book is that not just a cure, but the influence and, in some cases, intrusion of robots and algorithms and IBM's Watson into taking apart data and statistics and running it through genetic factors and, you know, DNA, RNA, and whatever, and saying, okay, 97% reliability. If you're, instead of having a radiologist sit there for, you know, 48 hours and run through scans and scans and scans and scans, never have any, or relatively any interaction with patients, the algorithms did it for him or her and came up with a 97% accuracy of a diagnosis, and here's the procedure for your genetic type to follow, and freed up the doctor as well as the support people that you're talking about to do other things or to get involved in literally a completely different field.
Well, that's right. And
he's not saying it's a magic cure. He's saying a lot of the time that all kinds of doctors, especially radiologists, but others, don't spend with patients that lead to bad outcomes could be spent more with patients rather than diagnosis and analysis.
Well, that would be the good thing. Okay, but I'm also talking about these are industries. I mean, overhead is, quote, overhead. I mean, the people
right.
who spend the time. I think it's better, David, because I had some health issues a long time ago, and hopefully, knock on wood, they don't ever come back. But the amount of paperwork back and forth to the hospitals was about a 6-month project. Where the doctor's office
and it's worse planned. Now.
Well, in some places, no. Some places, you get one.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's efficient and, you know, put into dashboards and whatever where they can have it handle it. But at least according to this book, the efficiency is far, far, far from where it should be.
Well, I would agree with that. But I think some have made, I'm going to throw them a bone and say some have made some progress.
Right.
I think at Northwestern you get one bill and it comes quicker. It used to be you never paid your bill for 6 months because everyone was different every month. They're still fighting back and forth. So finally, when you got two or three that were the same number, you paid it, right?
Right.
how stupid was that, Maddie? But it essentially was the truth. But I'm looking at, when I look at these numbers, I should never let Carl, you know, toss me into this page. But look at what's happening to the employment right now, and I'll just run this by you, David. I'll be as brief as possible. Since 2010, which was the highest unemployment rate in the last, when the whole fiasco from 2008 was 9.6, 14.8 million people unemployed.
Really? That was higher than the beginning of 2009?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it must be, it's a whole year, so it must be the average of the year or something. I don't know.
Right.
But here's where I'm going with this, and this is really sobering. If you listen to everybody, you listen to Obama tell you what a spectacular job he did putting people back to work, not to mention this big bazoo, telling every day that how much he's done. But look at these are downright sobering. In 2010, there were 237 million people in the over 16 workforce, okay? Now there's 258. This is from the worst to the best.
Less than 10%.
No, we picked up 20 million people available.
And 237 is less than 10%.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying just think of the number itself. We picked up 20
right.
million people. Of that, 153 to 163 close, say 10 million have entered the workforce. Okay, so we actually have less people as a percentage of the workforce now than we did in 2010 when the unemployment rate was 9.6%. Now, that would not be intuitively obvious to anybody.
Right.
The amount of people employed 2010 was 139, and now it's 156. So it's up like 16 or 17. Okay, the amount of people unemployed have gone from 14.8 down to 6.2. So it's actually down up like 8. Look at this other number. People not counted as employed or working went from 83 to 95. So basically, you take those two numbers together, roughly half the people that entered the workforce since 2010, of the 20 million, we picked up like 15 in the workforce, and we picked up five or six on the other side. We're down eight in one spot, and we're down up nine. We picked up, you know, five on the other side. So we actually haven't even really helped out all that much. I mean, so the unemployment rate of new people coming in since 2010 in the world's best economy, according to two presidents, is like 25%. Is the unemployment rate of the people starting since then. If you go back to other decades, virtually all the people who entered the workforce went into the jobs. Well, now that's not happening. So if you were to take a whole industry, and Matty Weber stumbles across, some virus was working on the bacteria, right? Isn't that what it is, basically? Penicillin is a mold, is it? It's a mold.
Right.
Well,
yes.
So somebody sort of discovers that. Well, suppose Matty Weber's in his kitchen, by the way, it's very clean, so it wouldn't happen there. He decides it's some piece of seaweed that he had for dinner the other night because he's on a health kick was eaten, you know, whatever, in a laboratory, was eating the cancer cells. And all of a sudden, next week, there's a sweeping cure for cancer. And we all of a sudden have 10 million people thrown out of work. I don't know what these numbers, the way they're working right now, David, if that looks all that good. I don't know if they all enter in another business. I mean, we've got, if you look at these numbers, it tells you that more people are working, which is good. Unemployment, the people actively looking, or at least you're counting, are less, but that the structural issues are way more. Of people that are never coming back, people on disability, people.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But I've always been of the impression, just anecdotally, because I know so many people that have you know, set up businesses at home, whether it's Amazon or it's eBay or it's. I just believe there's an underground economy. The Uber and Lyft drivers and whatever. Who knows how many of those are counted, how they're counted, if they're counted. You know, I just have such a hard time, just if nothing else, the Bureau of Census, you know, taking the labor statistics and, you know, anecdotal stories of, you know, oh, well, it's raining so I didn't go out and count. And, you know, I just, when we see, just what I referred to at the beginning of the show, how little they've counted, you know, health care in the equation, 5.5% when it's, you know, 19%, and that kind of thing. I don't have so much faith in those statistics.
I would say that, again, you're we see this a lot on the show because I do it myself. You have this feeling that you judge everybody by the people around you and yourself. And that can be very dangerous. In other words, I would agree that if somebody we knew was out of a job, we'd probably find him or her driving Lyft or driving Uber or something. We'd see them hustling to do something. Maybe they'd be counted, maybe they wouldn't. Now, at the end of the year, I would think that the Lyft people, I don't know if they get a paycheck or a 1099, I'm guessing they get a 1099, but somewhere along the line, they're going to get counted. And, oh, by the way, if you call their house, the wife or the husband's going to say, yeah, Joe's working or Jane's working or he's out driving. Look.
If you do.
Okay.
Or if you knock on the door.
Right.
Yes.
But there's a survey there somewhere. But I think, David, also that we have to understand, and again, I don't know the numbers, that not for every person, but these numbers are telling you, if every person is out driving Lyft, there's somebody in Alabama or West Virginia or maybe Janesville, Wisconsin or somewhere that the factory left, they dropped off the rolls, they're on long-term disability, they're on long-term drugs, they're getting a check from someplace. I mean, I think there's a lot of that we wouldn't see.
And right, question.
So, I mean, when you count on these people to add these numbers together for us, I'm saying if you look at this big, we're all on one page here, it don't look so good.
Right. No, that I agree with. And that we have, you know, when they tell us, you know, it's 1.9% inflation, we can sit here and, you know, look at our own shopping cart and health insurance and taxes and education and whatever and say, we know it's 4 to 4.5%. It doesn't matter, really. I mean, it matters, but it really doesn't matter when you go to the market, because those are the only numbers we have to go on, regardless
right.
of what we intuitively believe or intellectually or whatever.
I honestly believe that there's lost, and I get this anecdotally, Dave, people who go on a vacation somewhere or someplace, and you say, you know, okay, what was it like up in Lauren, Wisconsin? Or you went to you know, Ozarks or someplace, what was it like? And I'd say, well, geez, it didn't look like anybody had a job. Everybody's cooking crystal meth. Not everybody, but I mean, there's a lot of that going on. There's the guy from the Washington Post wrote about, you know, the couple counties in Alabama where, what, 50% of the people are on, there used to be a factory there, and now there isn't. They're on long-term Social Security disability and that type of thing. You know, everybody's got a bad back, which they probably do. You know, if you work in a factory all the time, especially if you're lifting furniture all day. Are we gaining on it or are we not? I mean, if you go into West Loop here, you think the world is, Chicago's the world's oyster. I mean, there's nothing but young people making a lot of dough. God, I wish we owned the bar right near everybody else stop at Racine there, and I think we'd do very well. There's a lot of things where you see, you know, things moving forward, but then all of a sudden you also look at how many restaurants are now in the area, and once you get past that bar, some nights during the week there's nobody in them, some nights are packed. I don't know if they're making any money or not, David. With all the taxes in the city and stuff going up, I don't, with these leases, you know, who knows? But I guess what I'm saying is these numbers do not show the type, you would guess, and I'm not just always picking on Trump, but you would guess that if you went back to the depths of this great recession, that these numbers would look a lot better than that, and they just don't.
Right. No, I get what you're saying, and I agree.
I mean, I would, because, I mean, and the thing that bothers me from a news standpoint, which we try and talk maybe too much on the other side of it, the thing that bothers me is, why do people look at this unemployment report, this unemployment number? It's nothing. Whether you got 500,000 people there or not there versus the last column, which is everybody else, one column's 6 million, the other one's 95. Okay, so
right.
next
And beyond that, you know, it's lagging. A lagging indicator. Everyone takes it, not everyone, 90% of the people take it as a leading indicator where everything's going, but it's lagging by economic standards. And beyond, it's seasonally adjusted big time. It's revised minimum of twice, sometimes three times as you go forward. And really, I just, in my long experience, you know, I mean, at one point it was trade balance and budget deficit, whatever, things that aren't even, you know, money supply, things that, you know, are very important that aren't even hardly talked about anymore. But I think as time has gone on, the jobs figures, yeah, it'll spike the market for a day, an hour, sometimes only 30 minutes, sometimes not at all. If it's really devastatingly different from what the estimates are, it might be a 1 or 2 day affair, but I don't think the market puts as much stock into it as it used to.
But if you were to take, I mean, just a normal, if you were to say attention here in the in a local bar anywhere in the country, and you were to say, okay, the unemployment number, the amount of people unemployed went from 14.8 to 6.2, is that good? There isn't a person in the room that isn't going to hoist his beverage of choice and say, yeah, that's really good. We're making some serious progress. We say, wait a minute, there's this other column. We don't know what these people do. That number went from 83. We know they're not working. We don't know if they're what they are, going to school or old or retired or whatever. That number went from 83 to 95 at the same time. So that one's up 12, the other one's down 8. And all of a sudden, everybody drops their beer on the table and say, whoa, wait a minute, say what? I mean, right? It's just a weird. All right, David, Mark.
Hey, real quick, David writes in on Twitter. He says, ask David Andelman if we saw a technical reversal in the metals markets at the end of last week.
Yes, well, along with the column or all the articles this weekend with China accumulating gold, David, is that part of it?
I mean, it's so different. China's big time. Australia's big time. The Asian is big time. But I do think that I think the gold is really in the process of bottoming, number one. But a lot of it has to do with their easy money policy, and, you know, what's going to happen with trade. And, of course, the dollar as well. So it's a very, there's no one answer. I'd like to answer that question, but there's really not one answer.
Well, why would all of a sudden, out of all these weeks that I've been long gold, this weekend, now am I reading about Chinese are accumulating gold? What would possess them, assuming they've changed their policy and the article is correct, why all of a sudden now, do you think?
I honestly really don't know the answer to that.
Now, when they
I wish I did, but it looks like a W bottom formation, and I really think breaks are to be bought right here.
Real quick, when they buy gold, what do? They buy it on our exchanges here, or they go out and buy cash gold? What do they do?
I think they have contracts with London.
Okay, so they buy it probably LME. Oh, that would make sense. S&P futures down 550, NASDAQ futures down 1675. You got a pick tonight, David?
I think Virginia will wear them down, but I think it'll be very close.
Well, all right. I'm kind of a Virginia fan, too. Thank you, Maddie. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.